Welcome to Trumpy America. I mean, welcome to False Flag Weekly News, the weekly news show that always calls it the way we see it, peeling back the headlines and looking at what lies beneath. And when we say what lies beneath, boy, do they ever lie. It's mind-boggling. Trying to peel off the layers of lies these days is almost like, you know, opening those Russian dolls and you find another one inside. And that's pretty much the story of this election, as far as I can tell. I think we were all set up by a big false flag. The headline over at the Mirror in the UK pointed out that 11-9 is the new 9-11. And as we see in our second story over at Veterans Today, Gordon Duff broke this story, which has now been picked up by Mark Crispin Miller, a New York University professor, among others, that we just had our 9-11 or our 11-9, a stolen election. And Trump started talking about stolen elections in order to poison the well so that nobody could complain when his people did it. Tony, do you buy this analysis?
Well, I'm certainly open to it. And I have to say, I woke up a couple of times dreaming about Duff's analysis, which says that essentially from a site in Macedonia, Israel operatives rigged voting machines, the software rigged, and made 10 million votes disappear. And, as I read it, it sort of rang true. And then when I saw Mark Crispin Miller, who I don't think was writing to back up Gordon Duff's view, but he had statistics showing the disparity between the exit polls and how the numbers came out. And I have to say that, on election night, I watched the stuff, and with all the background I have, I just kind of accepted it on face value. And then seeing last night Gordon Duff's, brand new article, and backed up by Mark Crispin Miller, who is still maintaining his university job, who, is, unlike most progressives, never backed away from the 9/11 issue. Mark Crispin Miller has a deep knowledge of the rigged voting system in the United States, especially the combination of privatized control of these voting machines by companies and the way that these voting machines, the software, can so easily be rigged. And
they're all the voting machines, Tony. The voting machines are all owned by Warren Buffett and Republicans. In other words, the Republican Party essentially owns the voting machines. Every single documented election theft, with the possible exception of Hillary stealing the nomination from Bernie, has been in favor of the Republicans. And the exit polls, which used to be identical with the results up until the installation of black box voting machines, instantly diverged. And ever since then, there's been an advantage to the Republicans in terms of reported vote count versus exit polls. So this would not be a divergence from the pattern if indeed this was stolen for Trump. Not by Trump necessarily, but for Trump.
Yes, and of course, Trump goes off to Israel and meets, like Mark Zuckerberg, with the great don of our times, the crime boss of all crime bosses, Netanyahu, and comes back a remade person. And so the idea that the usual suspects seem to be lining up around Hillary Clinton, but in fact, this may have been a kind of a false narrative being put upon us, that in fact, Trump is totally in line with the neocon Zionist agenda. And of course, it would make sense that the rest of the Republican Party, who seem to be alienated from him, is now falling in around him. So this is devastating news. It is in the order of 9/11 that, we have a thoroughgoing Israeli-controlled police state with Trump as the front guy, subject to God knows, what blackmail they have on him, what drug potions he's being put upon. Who is this man, Donald Trump?
Well, he's a made man in the Meyer Lansky crime mob, Tony. He got his start in the gambling business, which is how he built his fortune, by taking over that, what was the name of that company that was built by Permindex, which is the Mossad organized crime wing of the CIA. And he took over from a guy who's a documented CIA frontman. So Trump basically got his job from the Meyer Lansky criminal cartel, which is the biggest criminal cartel on earth, ethnically Jewish, very much allied with Zionist interests. and they put him in charge of the casinos, and the rest is history. So we know where he's coming from. We know who he's surrounding himself with. And then we look at these numbers on the screen here. We have a 6% deviation in North Carolina between the exit polls and the reported results, 5.5% in Pennsylvania, almost 5% in Wisconsin, 2.5% in Florida. These are the key states that swung the election. And those kinds of deviations from exit polls just don't happen. They never happen. Exit polls are virtually always less than a point of actual results. But there have been these deviations in favor of Republicans consistently as telltale clues to election theft ever since about the turn of the millennium. And so I think in this case, Mark Christman Miller and Gordon Duff are right. Let's move on to the next slide. We see that Mark Christman Miller has that analysis in his video, Can They Be Stolen? Of course elections can be stolen. They're set out to be stolen. The only purpose of manufacturing black box machines, which again, I emphasize, are owned all 100% by Republicans, is to steal elections. You would not have these machines if you were not having stolen elections. And in our next slide, Bob Petrakis and Harvey Wasserman, two of our top experts on stolen elections, wrote this piece back in April after the nomination was stolen from Bernie Sanders and handed to hapless Hillary. And I think Hillary was essentially the most unpopular, most useless candidate they could possibly put up there, knowing that this would make it possible for them to put Trump in the White House. And here we have Petrakis and Wasserman asking why the left can't deal with this. Trump, who's his people are about to steal the election for him, starts yammering about election theft. And then everybody says, oh, that's an evil conspiracy theory. We don't talk that way over on the left. And they don't. And they allow the elections to be stolen from them time after time after time. Well, Greg Palast has written about this. Millions of voters were taken off the voting rolls by rigged computer programs ahead of the election. That plus the black box machines. Probably Duff is right that 10 million Democratic votes were disappeared.
Well, if that's the case, surely Hillary Clinton would be able to apprehend that, would see that. So the idea of Hillary Clinton making her concession speech, so she must be on side with this. She must, they must have gotten to her, and she must be a willing partner in this facade, or subject to threats and intimidation and blackmail, which of course we know these people are. Sheldon Adelson did support Trump, talking about gambling casinos and the darkest, dirtiest type of money in the United States. Woolsey, a former CIA director, I heard him on the radio identifying the first priority will be to do away with the deal with Iran. And Iran is back on the number one enemy list, according to the head of, former head of the CIA, who seems to be speaking for Trump's foreign policy. And what will Trump do with all of this background of having condemned the highest level of leadership in the United States as totally corrupt, crooked, dishonest, murderous politicians? He's now going to be courting this same group and bringing them into his government. I doubt if he'll have anything credible with respect to criminal charges. Remember all those calls for lock her up, Hillary Clinton. Well, what about that, Donald Trump? Is there any chance there's any consistency in what you say, or are you total psyop? You look to be a total psychological operation who probably himself isn't even aware of the way he's being played.
Well, Trump and Clinton should be locked up with Jeffrey Epstein, and they should all be sharing a really bad cell at Rikers Island, as far as I'm concerned. But these voting machines, according to Bob Petrakis and Harvey Wasserman, are leading experts in this. They did a lot of the spade work on the 2004 stolen election, where Ohio was just blatantly stolen. They didn't even cover their tracks. Anyway, Petrakis and Wasserman point out that nearly all of American voting machines are a decade old. Almost all are controlled by a single company, ESNS, which is owned by Warren Buffett, a Republican operative. And the courts have ruled that the software is proprietary, making the vote counts beyond public scrutiny. This stuff up.
They did cover their tracks to the extent that his name is Mark McConnell, isn't it? The man who was murdered, who had Mike McConnell, who was working with Karl Rove. So they murdered him to cover up their tracks. I have to say, this voting machine scam, I looked at it in some detail after the 2011 election in Canada, where I wrote Fixing Elections Through Fraud, where there was voter suppression. But that got me looking at the literature on the voting machines and how crooked that is and how connected it is to the most obvious elements of organized crime. And I must say, Mark Crispin Miller distinguished himself as I was surveying the various authorities on the subject. He is genuinely an authority on this subject. And this is the fact that the United States hasn't addressed this in any serious way is, you know, just disgusting. Of course, the thing about election fraud, it can never be dealt with because the people who get away with it then dominate the government that should be looking into it. And of course, they're not going to do that. So election fraud is the classic reward that cannot be really affected. So it really does cause us to have to conclude that elections no longer have any credibility in the United States. The inauguration of Donald Trump is some weeks ahead. Of course, this won't be reported properly on the mainstream media. They'll lie and cover it up, but sensitive people, the best informed audience that we have for this very show, as you know, one of the last holdouts of free speech on the internet, what are we going to do leading up to this inauguration of this election fraud president who really the forces that came behind him to pull this off are incredibly adept, incredibly expert, and we're incredibly stupid to keep accepting again and again what's dealt out by this group of thugs running the world right now.
Well, that's as I pointed out in my book, Truth Jihad, when Fox News types ask me, oh, you think you're so smart? I say, well, no, it's that all of you are just so stupid. I hate to say that. It sounds arrogant, but come on, folks. You know, let's move to the next.
And of course, you can't get a good job in the American media if you're educated. I mean, apparently you can't get a good job in universities now if you're educated, if my experience is any indication.
Well, they used to say that if you score higher than 90 points in an IQ test, you can't be hired to be a police officer. And I think they've moved that kind of requirement over to the university and the media as well. So let's move to the next slide. We conspiracy theorists won, so why aren't I celebrating? That was my headline for my first reaction to this election. As I pointed out, giving the devil his due, giving Trump his due here, he challenged mainstream narratives more than any other candidate in history ever has. He said Bush was responsible for 9/11. Cruz's dad killed JFK. The international banksters run the world. Obama and Hillary created ISIS. American elections are routinely rigged. He should know. Hillary stole the nomination, Bernie. Yeah, or at least somebody did. Scalia was murdered. NATO's a swindle. Russia is right in Syria and Ukraine. Bush's WMD scare was a pack of lies. Trade treaties are a scam. Vaccines cause autism. National sovereignty is threatened by the New World Order conspiracy. Bill Clinton is a rapist. Hillary's an enabler. Wow, what a crazy conspiracy theorist. The only problem is every one of those conspiracy theories is basically true. So thank you, Donald Trump, for saying these amazingly true things. But, of course, he also poisons the well by saying all sorts of nonsense. Asbestos are not dangerous. That's just a con. The California drought doesn't exist. Muslims danced and celebrated on 9/11. Not Israelis. Climate change is a hoax. Obama's a secret Muslim, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, and of course, vote fraud is the problem. He says that it's those Democratic dead voters that are voting that's the problem. He doesn't point at the machines. So Trump is a very sneaky guy, I think, or at least the people behind him have run a very, very sneaky program here. But we didn't really win this election, conspiracy theorists. We just thought we did.
Yeah, and of course, he has done, I think, a service in a way with his education on the nature of how power works in the United States. And now we're going to witness him acting true to his scenario that he laid out, because he's obviously a mobster himself. He's deep roots with mobsters. He couldn't be where he is without being a mobster. And so what is going to be made of that? Of course, I guess there'll be rebellion, there'll be uprising, and maybe that's what they want. That gives the excuse for the crackdown. And of course, the question of the court and the fact that the court is now sort of crippled, it's in a stalemate, and that the demise of Scalia was created to set this up, this reality that our high court can't take action right now. I found that a very interesting aspect of Duff's analysis.
Well, once again, Gordon Duff, the much maligned Gordon Duff, and occasionally for good reason, but frankly, a lot more of what he says is true than, you know, 60%. And he's got his finger on a lot of pulses, and he's ahead of the game a lot of times. So give the guy credit where it's due. I think he got this one basically right, it looks like, so far. We're still, you know, we're still learning. We're still figuring it out. The next slide shows that we had a great, great story here by Timothy Fitzpatrick on Trump's ties to, what do we call them, the Zionist mob. Tony, you said this article kind of opened your eyes.
Well, it's just so well documented. And going back to Roy Cohn, is it?
C-O-A-N?
Cohen. You know, that is such an interesting, he's such an interesting operative, exploiting the McCarthy era in different ways. And it's very interesting that now that we have much worse than the McCarthy era in terms of, you know, replicating anti-communism, only inserting Muslim terrorists as the ultimate scare tactic, that here is the student of Roy Cohn, Donald Trump, applying that. And of course, his Islamophobia inducing exploiting politics, it's going to come to the front right now, and he's going to be really showing new frontiers of ways to exploit hatred of your fellow human being for political gain, and to increase the repressiveness of society with the cheering consent of a large portion of that society who have been trained to hate their fellow human beings.
Well, that's what I pointed out in the We Conspiracy Theorists One, So Why Aren't I Celebrating article, that all of Trump's anti-New World Order talk, his anti-NATO talk, his anti-corporate globalization talk, that's great talk, but he can't possibly walk that walk. He would be taking on the world's most powerful enemies if he were actually going to do that. That's all just show, and that's just all blowing smoke. But what he's really going to do, he's got to scapegoat somebody for the terrible situation that Americans in general and the working class in particular is in. Who's he going to scapegoat? The big powerful guys who could swat him like a fly if they wanted to? Or is he going to keep scapegoating powerless people, Muslims and Hispanics? And the Hispanics, there are a lot of them, and, you know, 20 million perhaps undocumented immigrants, not the official 15 million, maybe more. Try and throw all those people out? I don't think so. The big corporate employers who need that cheap labor won't let you do that, Don. So, of course, who's he going to scapegoat? He's going to scapegoat the Muslims. So we're going to see another big false flag or several, and Islamophobia is going to come ratcheted up to unprecedented heights. You know, maybe even proverbial extermination camps, although I doubt if they'll use Zyklon B. I don't think that would work. But who knows? They probably have other means these days. Anyway, it's a grim future we're facing here. And part of it, Tony, is it's not just Trump himself, but look who's surrounding him. Next slide. VP Mike Pence, the 9/11 anthrax criminal, is going to be completely in charge. He's a card-carrying neocon, and he's the guy that Trump apparently has handed the whole whatever power the presidency has, which may not be that much, is now in the hands of Mike Pence. Amy Goodman reported that John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, said that Trump came to him, offered him the VP nod, and said, "You'll run the whole show. You'll run domestic policy and you'll run foreign policy. I'm just going to be out there yammering about Make America Great Again. You're in charge." And Kasich turned him down. Well, Mike Pence didn't. So Mike Pence is now in charge. Who's Mike Pence? Mike Pence is the guy that was the main man in the anthrax attack. The neocons that did 9/11 anthrax, it was one operation, as we know from Graham McQueen's book on the 2001 anthrax conspiracy. Dr. McQueen, a fully employed academic, has proven that these guys set up the anthrax component of the 9/11 anthrax false flag operation well in advance. The purpose was to blame Saddam Hussein, and they wheeled out their team to point the finger at Saddam Hussein, and the lead guy there was Mike Pence. Mike Pence is a murderer. He's a 9/11 conspirator. He's an anthrax killer, and he's going to be in charge of America's domestic and foreign policy. Tony, once again, you can't make this stuff up.
Well, a shout out to Dr. McQueen, Graham McQueen, founder of the Peace Studies Unit at McMaster University in Hamilton. Incidentally, he has been retired for some time. Professor McQueen, you said he's been in the saddle in the academy.
Okay, well, he's emeritus. They haven't pulled his pension.
Yeah, well, that's a little, that's hitting a little bit below the belt right now,
sorry,
Kevin,
Tony.
But, yeah. So is Pence some kind of, Dick Cheney, version, Dick Cheney, we know, was a sort of hands-on guy as, Bush was a, sort of did his actor thing. They know that Trump can't really be handled, counted upon to handle real hands-on things, but it doesn't look to me that Pence has the competence of Dick Cheney, the dark, diabolical competence of Dick Cheney. He seems to have the diabolical character, though, and doesn't seem to have any allegiance to anything approaching the truth. So there is a top 9/11 conspirator at the side of the right-hand side of the president-elect Trump. Yeah, we have cause to be afraid, very, very afraid, especially if you're Muslim.
And of course, Pence he doesn't need to be diabolically competent. I don't think Dick Cheney was particularly competent either. I think both of them take orders from neocons around them. He's a front man, just like Trump, just like everybody pretty much that you see a lot in the media. They're basically actors, they're stooges, they're puppets. They're out there to distract you. Anyway, the mainstream media at least admitted right before this election that they're facing a skeptical public on election night. That was the New York Times pointing out that nobody believes the mainstream media anymore. And of course, all of Trump's guys thought that Hillary was going to win in a rigged election. And in fact, it was the other way around. They put Trump in a rigged election. But of course, nobody on the left will say that because they've been brainwashed that it's all conspiracy theories.
It was very strange. Watching the telecasts like CNN and NBC, where the commentators, of course, were having to acknowledge on some level that Trump's rise to the presidency was largely by condemning them, the Washington insider figures who are all over the television, mainstream media television on election night. And there they were, the very sort of scapegoats that Trump had, not exactly scapegoats. He rightly identified their dishonesty, their complete failure to be true to any professional ethics in their degraded prostitute profession. And it was really weird watching them try to explain this phenomenon where their greatest critic, Donald Trump, was now the top man in the country.
Well, I think the New York Times was right when they said, quote, an intense public distrust in the media is threatening the network's traditional role as election night scorekeeper. So it's kind of ironic that all these people are rioting. We'll get to that in a moment. We're not rioting over the obvious election fraud. Anyway, next story. What's this all about? Who's behind setting this Trump guy, this mobster with an hideous personality? I mean, more than half the country hates him. Who sent him? That's what you ask. That's what a mobster asks when some other mobster comes and whacks somebody in your family. Who sent him? Well, that's our question with Trump. Who sent him?
Yeah, and I'm going to say that you're the prolific Dr. Barrett, and you're just turning out very significant commentary on this subject. And so tell us about your article here, Kevin.
Well, my insight here was that I see a replay of 2008 here. I see some of the same people who recognize that there's something very wrong with this country, as V for Vendetta put it, who drank the Hopi Changey Kool-Aid in 2008, are drinking the Trump Kool-Aid this year. They actually think that, these superficial characteristics, in Obama's case, superficially he looked like a peacenik, and he looked like everything that Bush wasn't, right? He was well-spoken, and he was black, of course, and all of this stuff, a Harvard-educated lawyer. He was totally the anti-Bush in every possible way. Well, Trump is the anti-Obama in every possible way, whereas Hillary would have been just more Obama presidency, right? The first black, the first woman, a kind of liberal compromiser working with a big globalist bankster elites. It's the same, same old, same old, same old. So the elites have recognized that they need to substitute a totally opposite frontman for the previous frontman, because everybody's gotten so pissed off at the way things are going that they channel their hatred towards the frontman. So under Bush, Cheney, all of the people on the left, sort of the Democrat side, and further on out, hated Bush and hated Cheney, especially hated Bush. So they put in the anti-Bush to mollify those people and put them back to sleep. Same thing today. This anti-Obama crowd, the people who are angry about the way things are going for really good reason, are then going to be put back to sleep by putting in Trump, who is the anti-Obama. He's the, you know, Obama's Harvard-educated, law school, liberal, globalist, anti-racist. Trump is everything Obama is not. He's boorish, he's racist, he's nativist. He hasn't ever read a serious book in his life. He's the perfect anti-Obama. So they're putting to sleep the people who are pissed off at the way things are going and then channeled it onto Obama. So that's my take sort of on the symbol level, of the symbolic level of what's happening. But as in the next slide, Tony, tell me.
Can I respond just before we?
Yeah, well, the next story is the same thing, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Well, to extrapolate our discussion on Press TV on election night, the disappointment with the hopey, changey Obama was reflected in, you know, Occupy movement. And you couldn't get a change out of the U.S. electoral system more seemingly on the surface profound than from Bush to Obama. And then it turned out to be all a facade and an illusion. So Occupy movement and the idea of going to our public squares to create an alternative form of government, not just to go along with the electoral politics that looking for some savior to correct things for us, but to actually realize we have to, as a society, change our political economy, change our relationships in how we make decisions. That was what Occupy was all about. But it turned out to be easy to subvert it, easy to crush it with police actions, easy to undermine it with a crooked, corrupt judiciary that kept making little municipal bylaws overrule our great constitutional promises of free speech and freedom of assembly. So this time, the disappointment, we have to do something much more well thought through than Occupy, something that really expresses that we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it, and we're done with any trust in the electoral process as structured, that we have no choice if we're going to survive, create some kind of future for our children, but to change the way we organize politics, organize political economy, organize countries. Maybe the United States will have to transform itself into several polities.
We're already seeing Cal exit, California exit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a yet another manifestation of, you know, the election was rigged, and here is a person called Smith laying out that a part of the plan here is to let the economy fall, which of course it's just being propped up by sort of gas fumes right now, just being energized by gas fumes. The economy, quantitative easing, is essentially finished. We'll have to study what is really behind that term, like we had to study in 2008 what's behind the term derivatives. This quantitative easing is going to collapse the next level of the economics. Trump is in place to be blamed, and that's the thesis here.
And that was my thesis too. As I pointed out, they put in Obama as the anti-Bush, and now they put in Trump as the anti-Obama. And so what's going to come next? Well, it's obviously going to have to be the anti-Trump. And how's that going to work? Well, Trump's presidency is going to be a total disaster. I mean, the whole country already hates him. Now, maybe, sure, they'll have a Bush.
Not the whole country, Kevin. The whole country.
Okay, not quite the whole country. But his popularity figures in the polls are about 60% negative. That's unprecedented. There's never been a president that came into office with, much more than half of that kind of negative figure. So this is an amazing situation for the beginning of a presidency. And I'm pretty sure, maybe they'll rally people to him the way they rallied people to Bush with 9/11. They may do another 9/11 to create that moment of, let's all swing together so we can go crush Syria, crush Iran, attack, whatever they feel like they need to do. Maybe that'll happen. I don't know. But the upside, the long-term side of this, which could be in 4 years or it could be in 8 years, is that Trump's presidency is going to be a disaster. And the disaster is going to be blamed on his nativism, his nationalism, his anti-globalism. And so they're going to try to strengthen their global institutions and keep the march towards a Rockefeller, Rothschild-driven world government. going by ultimately demonizing Trump, making sure that everything falls apart under his watch, and then all of that gets blamed. And the anti-Trump, he'll probably be the Antichrist. He'll probably be the figure that they want to crown as the, you know, next king of the world on the throne over in occupied Jerusalem. Am I exaggerating? Well, I hope so.
Yeah, the throne over in occupied Jerusalem. Very nice. Let's move on.
Okay, well, there were huge protests against Trump, as I said, massively unpopular president-elect. I don't think there's ever been a case of massive protests and even some riots greeting a presidential candidate. But all of these Kool-Aid-drinking left-wing sheeple aren't protesting the likelihood of election theft. What idiots! What complete blind pablum-sucking, you know, morons. They've been completely put to sleep by Soros money, by Democracy Now!, by the left, you know, corporate globalist, the foundation-funded pseudo-alternative media on the left, and they're too stupid to know that our elections are determined by black box voting machines. You can't make this stuff up.
Well, we've got to save some room for the intelligent people among the progressive left. We can't just condemn everybody as too stupid to, way more stupid than us. But one thing that is coming through to me, and I'm not in the United States, I'm here in Canada, and so I don't get the nuances of the campaign as it was unfolding. But the hatred towards Bush, towards Trump, excuse me, towards Trump is, that he has exploited hatred, that he has used the distrust of Muslims, of Latinos, of Mexicans in the most cynical way to incite hatred as a vote-getting technique. And the resentment and the danger that this kind of politics represent. I mean, I think we have to allow for some room that this this state of alarm, this state of emergency in the progressive left towards what Trump is bringing into office, into the highest echelons of power in the land, is truly reprehensible. And there is some merit, some need for this kind of response. Now, I did predict that Trump would get more votes the night of the election, you recall, Kevin. And I did predict that there is a sort of civil war situation that is almost inevitably going to flow from this this outcome. It isn't how I imagined it to be. I thought that Trump would get more votes, but somehow Hillary would cheat her way into office.
And it turned out to be the other way around.
But, you know, it's a reflection to me of, wow, was I gullible? I mean, how manipulative, how adept these people are. Like, we've got to hand it to them that, that is some fancy maneuvering. Netanyahu, you've definitely got your act together in a very diabolical, cunning, ruthless way to, you know, destroy civilization as we've known it, to set up your Jewish-related caliphate with the throne in Jerusalem, as you put it.
Well, I thought it was interesting, you know, speaking of insulting the corporate Kool-Aid drinking left, the foundation funded alternative media, all those sleepwalkers on the left. The same is true with the leadership of the major American Muslim organizations. We had the CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, which basically knows 9/11 was an inside job. I told them that. I went to their meeting in Ohio of some of the top people in CARE and showed them a film, and they all know it. But are they speaking out about that? Oh, no. So we have this quote of Corey Sandler from CARE saying that we've got a perfect storm of Islamophobia. The recent terror attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, coupled with the incendiary rhetoric against Muslims playing out during the White House campaign, that means Trump, created a perfect storm of Islamophobia in America. Okay, Corey Sandler, that's very true. Why didn't you mention that these so-called recent terror attacks in Paris and San Bernardino have been proven beyond any doubt to be total frauds, false flags designed to create that Islamophobia, as my false flag trilogy of books points out? Why won't he say that? Well, because they're controlled by the same forces. The people who print the money control people's thoughts and control people's mouths.
Yeah, and we have to deal with the reality that in the Muslim community, there's so much fear, and it is justified in a way, but the idea that, well, 9/11, we all know that 9/11 isn't as we were told in the mainstream media, but hey, we're Muslims. We're automatically suspects of being terrorists. So of course we can't say that. I mean, how many times do we hear variations of that version from our Muslim colleagues? Hatem Bazian, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, the key figure in the Muslim college in Berkeley. I mean, he won't go there, even he won't go there. And the other group that has a similar role in this, a similar situation, is Germans, people of German background. And of course, this story of Germans as the most monster people, as the worst ever purveyors of inhumanity and oppression of your fellow human being, Germans themselves are in a similar position where, well, we know it's not quite the way it's been told, and that our country is basically Israeli occupied territory with Angela Merkel as kind of the Israel spokesperson in Germany. But we can't say anything because we're German. And this paranoia, the way this mentality has been cultivated, so the groups that are demonized feel that they're so in danger that they can't give expression to their actual reflections, that they have to censor themselves. This is, you know, that first they came for the Muslims, we didn't say anything. Then they came for the Germans, we didn't say anything. Then they came for whatever group. This is what we're into now. Are we going to speak up? Is like Chris Hedges going to like get out of his cowardly duck and cover mode? Is Noam Chomsky going to be identified by the progressive left for the terrible abuses that have basically discredited and disabled the peace movement? So there is no peace movement at this moment of ultimate danger. The culprits on the progressive left really have some explaining to do, and we should appeal to our colleagues in the progressive left to force on the culprits some accountability, some dealing with what they have done to create, to be especially responsible for the situation we're in now, the danger to humanity, to civilization as we've known it.
Well, Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, who's actually the co-founder of Zaytuna College in Berkeley, which is the first Muslim university in America, it's actually Hatem Bazian may or may not be associated with. I know he teaches at Berkeley, UC Berkeley. Anyway, Sheikh Hamza Yusuf was quoted as saying, "We could go back to that post 9/11 environment, that witch hunt type environment." Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, because you have been covering up for the 9/11 criminals. You are thereby a perpetrator of the genocide against millions of Muslims. You are part of that. You know, you should be on trial for this because you can see a three-minute video of Building 7, Larry Silverstein's confession to demolishing it. You can put two and two together. You're capable of that, and you haven't done that. So you're responsible for the murder of 3 million Muslims, Sheikh Hamza Yusuf. I'm sorry to say it, but it's the truth, and maybe you better start facing the truth yourself.
And Gordon Duff is very clear about that when the culprits in 9/11 found out what they could get away with, and even now, 15 years later, how little the incredible nature, the lack of credibility to the official narrative of the 19 dudes with box cutters, that is still allowed to prevail, gave a license for this kind of incredibly audacious intervention into electoral politics and the voting, you know, through the vehicle of the voting machines, which those like Mark Crispin Miller and you and I have been talking about, and Jim Fetzer for a long time, but of course we can't be heard because we're conspiracy theorists. This inability to deal even with the obvious audacious lies of 9/11 created the context for this. So when you point to your Muslim colleague and high-ranking official who betrayed Muslim people terribly and put Muslim people and all humanity, contributed to the terrible state we're in right now, there's lots of blame to go around in this. Gordon Duff makes that very clear.
Of course, the real question is President-elect Trump a menace to Jews? So I guess we can expect that Jews are all going to be deported to Israel. Well, actually, Netanyahu would probably appreciate that. So maybe Netanyahu will figure out a way to do that. Netanyahu is no friend of the Jews. Neither are the top-level people in the Zionist power configuration who are running this stuff. And more and more American Jews are waking up to that. And I hope that under a Trump administration, even more will wake up to that.
And of course, you know, they're going to have to continue to develop the scenario. Oh, there's a terrible plague of anti-Semitism out there. There's a terrible danger. Neo-Nazis are on the rise. They're going to have to continue this narrative, which this article does. Hey, there has to be some accountability, even within Israel. You know, Israel has no extradition treaties. Israel is literally a crime laboratory, because once a criminal emigrates to Israel and is accepted as a citizen, no way can any country extradite those Israeli citizens to their own country to meet criminal charges for this or that. So it truly is a crime laboratory, Israel.
Right, right. And you know, we also have to remember when Netanyahu went over to France after he threatened that France was going to be attacked by the terrorists if it kept siding with the Palestinians, and if it recognized Palestine, France recognized Palestine. So less than a month later, in January 2015, Netanyahu's people did the Charlie Hebdo massacre. And then he went to Paris and tried to convince French Jews to flee for their lives to Israel. So he wants to ethnically cleanse Jews. And Israel has terrorized Jewish communities all over the Middle East and in France now. And then after that, over in Denmark, with that follow-up terror event to Charlie Hebdo, Netanyahu's people want to terrorize Jews as much as Muslims, and they would love to terrorize Jews into fleeing to Israel. Chaos in the United States might actually start pushing that at some point. Anyway, what's
I made the observation that Netanyahu marching around Paris, the city of lights, in the wake of the Charlie Hebdo, or We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, which you and I made that position. It was akin to seeing a Napoleon sort of move into the capital of the European Enlightenment and claim his chops as the victor of the global war on terror, and he's now cashing in his chips.
Okay, well, let's quickly look at Trump's victory speech. Well, I'm sure you can watch that somewhere else if you want to, folks.
Move on.
And then we have Trump saying what he wants to do in his first 100 days, and we'll see where that takes him. But there is a real parallel with Bush's first year in office, where, you know, Bush was extremely unpopular after he stole that election. And he needed something to unify the country, and then along came 9/11. Well, I kind of see some parallels here with Trump. I don't think he's going to get any more popular. He's going to be the first president with no honeymoon at all. You know, Bush didn't have much of one either. So we'll see how that goes. But let's move on to World War III. Well, let's not move on to World War III. Let's move on to the World War III news stories. NATO announces largest troop deployments against Russia since the Cold War. They snuck this in while we were all entranced by the spectacle of Donald Trump elections. Whoa. And then suddenly there's this giant troop movement towards Russia. And did you notice, Tony? A lot of people didn't.
Well, what is the nature of the relationship between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin? My sense is they actually do have some level of understanding, or is all of that another facade? What's your view?
Well, you know, I think that probably the Russian leadership, which is not just Putin, but he's kind of at the center of it, probably figured that Trump's rhetoric was better than what they were getting from the Obama administration, and that Hillary was part of the warmongering side of the Obama administration. So they probably really do tend to prefer Trump and are probably happy he won. And I don't really blame them. You know,
and maybe making this move just on the eve of the election is meant to force Trump's hand, that he's now dealing with a fait accompli that was done outside of his new form of power. It was done to create the context of how he's got to deal with Russia from here on in.
Maybe so. And then there are all these funny cyber attack stories going on, like this. You know, it's like a spy versus spy cyber attack game. Gordon Duff pointed out that it looks like this election theft happened from, was it, where did he say, Tony? Not Macedonia.
Yeah, I think it was Macedonia.
Yeah. So that's, you know, we're waiting for more corroboration on that. But meanwhile, all of these hacking games were going. Duff says that Israelis based in Macedonia stole the election for Trump, and that these are, but it was designed to be blamed on Russia. And meanwhile, during the election week, or just a couple of days before the election, we suddenly had these massive hacking stories of U.S. military is hacking Russia. We had U.S. hacked into the Russian networks, and then the five major Russian banks had a huge denial of service attack right on the eve of the election. What do you make of that?
Israeli skill and importance in the internet, in so-called decryption, in security companies that work through the internet. You know, Christopher Bolin had quite a good analysis of all this in his important text on the basis for believing Israel was disproportionately involved in the 9/11 crime. So this all plays out that Russia U.S. Mutual hacking may well be a facade underlying which is Israel's control of this whole operation.
Well, in any case, no matter what happens under Trump, we're not probably going to have a whole lot of happy thoughts about Hillary, a justly extremely unpopular candidate. You know, maybe some of those 10 million missing Democratic votes were missing because people couldn't get excited about voting for Hillary. We have to be reminded here that Francis Boyle, one of our top international law experts who teaches at the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, has a new book out called Destroying Libya and World Order. Tony, you wanted to plug this book?
I thought it was important. I think one of the defining moments in the election campaign was the frequently replayed tape of Hillary Clinton saying, you know, we came, we saw, he died. How he died was a ruthless attack by individuals who sodomized him as he, you know, humiliated him in every way as this international figure was being sent to his grave, if they even made it to a grave, Abu Ghraib more might be more like it. The you know treatment of Gaddafi in Libya, who was actually trying to create a decent world for the Libyan citizens who are small in number. This really is an indicator of a new stage of barbarity in the cabal's treatment of humanity.
And the same is true over in Libya, of course, with a destabilization of a country that followed Libya over in Syria. We're all waiting for the next moves, as this headline has it.
The removal of Gaddafi, it now becomes clear, was part of the opening up of the floodgates for migrants funded by George Soros and others to move largely from Africa south of the Sahara into Europe, that the removal of Gaddafi was the taking away the barrier to that movement, which is definitely a weaponized movement aimed at destabilizing, especially Germany.
Okay, well, so we'll see what happens in Syria during this interim between Obama and Trump. Moving on to the Zionism versus academic freedom rubric, we had a story about Thomas Suarez, who gave a talk at a UK university, a leading UK university, and apparently compared the Zio-Nazis to the Nazis, which, of course, is an apt comparison. That he called Israel a racist, fascist endeavor, etc. Well, for telling that amount of truth, he's now on the hot seat. Tony, I bet that didn't surprise you.
And he's a violinist. Seems that we have another violinist who is facing similar allegations. SOAS, Palestine Society. This is being attacked. This was a speech given, a presentation given at London University. The Israeli embassy got involved. The analysis of the Balfour Declaration in 1917, when Lord Balfour wrote to, guess who? Lord Rothschild, to declare that the area that's now covered by Israel would become a Jewish homeland, quote unquote, a Jewish homeland, and referred to the indigenous population as the non-Jewish population, Well, this Balfour Declaration was obviously part of a deal that essentially the deal was Rothschild and company bring U.S. into the war and reverse the fact that Germany was at that point victorious. And so there was this destabilizing deal, this Balfour Declaration. Here's a person trying to put this in some kind of historical context. But heaven forbid that we should have actual historical analysis prevailing in places like universities these days. The name of the game is amnesia, for the population generally to be disoriented and thus easy to manipulate. So Soares is obviously an accomplished scholar as well as a violinist, and he is being subjected to the kind of censorship and recriminations that are making our universities laughing stocks and places of, you know, intensified propaganda, sort of thought-free, mind-free zones these days, where students are given the impression that just come and, you know, pay your money and get your piece of paper and you're going to get a great job down the way, and we're not going to confuse you with like awkward notions about history. That's what's going on here.
Well, it's interesting, though, isn't it, that nobody's protesting this major crackdown on any kind of critique of Zionism in our universities, including yourself, Tony, being suspended without pay because you've given voice to an analysis that's shared by much, if not most, of the world. Certainly essentially all of the intellectuals in the Arab and Muslim world are further than you are in terms of that interpretation, but now you're suspended without pay. And you would think that the official defenders of academic freedom, such as Scholars at Risk, would be rushing to defend you, and they would be rushing to defend Thomas Suarez. They'd be rushing to defend Joy Corriga and on and on and on. But no, they are interested in scholars in countries far, far away from the West. They haven't even noticed that the Western Academy is under total mind control.
And of course, you know, this started in Lethbridge here with the article by J.W. Schnarr in the Lethbridge Herald, which I immediately recognized as a marker that B'nai B'rith, which is Israel, you know, extension of the Israel government in Canada through the Anti-Defamation League, that they were coming at me. So I would say, and of course, he started the critique with the assessment of False Flag Weekly News under the rubric, the headline, Conspiracy Theories. So I think my suspension without pay is a kind of marker and indicator of the importance of the work we're doing here on False Flag Weekly News. And I thank you, Kevin, for being the pioneer and the originator of this format, which I've now integrated myself into.
Well, thanks, Tony. And I, you know, I wish we could pay you twice your academic salary. Unfortunately, we'll have to have a lot of listeners and viewers rather contributing to our operation, which you can do. You can go to the False Flag Weekly News homepage at nolizeradio.org and kick in something to keep this going. Because we can't completely compete with people who are well-funded without being at least a little bit funded ourselves.
Yeah, and one thing we know for sure is that the authorities high up in all of this are taking us very, very seriously. And it would be nice if others got the word out that we should be taken seriously, because the marks of how seriously we're taken, I think, is in the, you know, no due process whatsoever, the rules completely thrown overboard, and from one day to the next, suspended without pay. Tenure, the institution of tenure, chucked aside. Of course, I don't hear too much from my colleagues about the fact that tenure exists no more, effectively. If they can do this to me, a full tenured professor, a suspended full tenured professor with 26 years in my institution, with 35 years teaching in post-secondary system, if they can do this to me, I guess anything's possible, and tenure exists no more. Thank you, Benjamin.
Well, actually, Tony, tenure still exists for anybody who doesn't use it. So it's catch 22. You know, yeah. If you want to use your tenure, it doesn't exist. Well, let's move on to Kashmir. Speaking of the blind leading the blind, now India is like purposely blinding hundreds of people by shooting these little metal pellets designed to blind people into crowds. This is just the latest in what's going on in occupied Kashmir. It's basically a genocide. The Indian government is the most brutal bunch of mass rapists and murderers and atrocity dealers, outers that's ever existed anywhere, as far as I can tell. Andrei Volchek, a great globe-trotting correspondent for my radio show, reported from Kashmir a while back and gave just a horrifying picture of what's going on there. And of course, Kashmir is Muslim majority, a great majority. The deal when India and Pakistan were created was that all Muslim majority regions are Pakistan. No exceptions. That was the deal. That was signed off on. That was the only accepted understanding for the independence of India and Pakistan. And India, being bigger and stronger, reneged because Kashmir has a lot of resources, and they just occupied Kashmir and have been genociding the population ever since. Every decent person on earth has to be at war with the nation of India and its evil leadership over this issue.
Well, here's how I see it. Coming out of World War II, there were major adjustments. One was the founding of the Jewish state of Israel, which was to be based on a partition. And there is still a kind of partition, as that wall, that apartheid wall in Israel indicates. This partition has never been really totally overcome. And Kashmir, in the deal to partition India, unified India into two polities, Pakistan and India, and all the chaos that flowed from that. So, you know, both Jerusalem and Kashmir were designated by the United Nations to be international zones of international governance.
And Tony. No. Kashmir was supposed to have a referendum to vote on its own future. And of course, it would have joined Pakistan.
I guess I just got that wrong. But my impression was that Kashmir and Jerusalem are both centers, very important centers, where some kind of international jurisdiction is required. And that, in my view, still is the case. Jerusalem was not intended to be the capital of the imperial empire of Israel. Jerusalem was intended to be a spiritual center for all of humanity under UN auspices. I don't think it's quite as cut and dry as you're saying with Kashmir, but I'll have to check that out.
Right. Well, yeah, check it out, Tony. The UN did say that about Jerusalem, but no, not Kashmir. The UN said that Kashmiris will vote on a referendum to decide their future, and India has never allowed that referendum. Let's move on to the next atrocity here. That's enough interruptions, Tony. Okay. That's okay. Way too many interruptions. People can't hear us when you interrupt. Modi has banned India's largest bills, which means anything over like $3, that's all gone. So no more economic freedom in India. Everybody, including peasants who can't afford a smartphone, has to go digital. Yet another reason that Modi absolutely must be overthrown. This man is a genocidal lunatic. He's created these mass killings. He was behind the mass killings of Muslims in several Indian cities based on false flags. He works with the Israeli Mossad in creating false flags in India that can be used to justify the mass murder of tens of thousands of Muslims in horrific pogroms. And he's the guy that was put in power in order to continue those policies, and now he's banning cash, thereby ending economic freedom in one of the world's fastest growing economies.
I'm going to jump in there.
Okay.
Yeah, I see this a little bit differently. This is like the $20 bills being canceled. This is like 80% of the paper currency just being withdrawn. And I see this as part of the attack on paper currency transactions that we're all supposed to become electronically linked to, you know, in our banking life, in our financial life. Therefore, you can simply turn off the lights, life support system, as for instance happened to me in suspension without pay. Somebody just one day to the next just decides to turn off the switch. And so we need to be using cash. It's becoming a revolutionary move simply to do financial transactions by cash.
Okay, well, moving on to Jerusalem, which you mentioned, Tony, the Israelis are banning the Muslim call to prayer in Jerusalem. It's been there since, basically ever since Islam existed, starting in 637 AD, just 5 years after the death of the last prophet, peace upon him. The Muslims created religious liberty in Jerusalem after it had been crushed under the Byzantines, and have been maintaining that religious liberty ever since until these crusaders came and essentially set up these crusader regimes, and we're living through the last crusader regime right now. Well, we kind of hit the end of our hour, Tony. Should we go through these last stories pretty quick?
Deal.
Okay. Marijuana legalization wins. Guess that's good. We don't want people in jail for that. That's stupid. Hypothyroidism is caused by fluoride. No fluoride in the water. Tony, you're associated with that issue, and people at university, some of them didn't like that. Well, they must be drinking too much fluoride.
People in Lethbridge here go crazy when I point out that fluoride, forced fluoridation in our water supply is like forcing neurotoxins into us. If you want fluoride, if you think it's so great, there's many ways you can take it, but it shouldn't be put into our drinking water where it's forced into us, and it's a neurotoxin, and maybe some people like the fact that we're dumbed down by chemtrails and GMOs and forced fluoridation.
Well, you got to do something with toxic waste, Tony, and if you can get rid of it by throwing it in the drinking water, well, you know, that's one way to do it.
Well, Mayor Chris Spearman here in Lethbridge, he is a fluoridation fundamentalist. He believes in it so deeply. Oh, my goodness. He's religious in his promotion of forced fluoridation. Mayor Chris Spearman. Thanks, Chris.
Well, that might explain a little bit about why the folks at the university aren't sharp enough to understand that tenure is under attack and they should be defending it. Anyway, how about Trump Tower? Trump Tower, the new Twin Towers, except there's only one of them. And the FAA has issued flight restrictions near Trump Tower. Apparently, they don't want the traitors in the U.S. Air Force working with Netanyahu to fly any planes into it by remote control, which is probably pretty much what was done on 9/11. And so if you want Trumpy America to blow up in a new 9/11, what better way to do it than to have a 9/11 at Trump Tower? Glad that the FAA is telling people not to fly near there. That certainly puts my mind at ease. And then last slide, Leonard Cohen passed away this week. So RIP Leonard Cohen, this song everybody knows is a pretty good anthem for this election and every election in recent times here in the United States. Everybody knows the fight is fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. And everybody who watches False Flag Weekly News at least knows. And if you want to keep on knowing, if you're not afraid of the truth, come back next week. I'm Kevin Herrick with Professor Tony Hall.
I'm going to make a tribute to Leonard Cohen. I grew up with him. His book, Beautiful Losers, was an incredible spectacle, very integral to my native studies, my Native American studies. What a tragic thing to see Leonard Cohen pass away. We love you, Leonard. You said so many profound things as a songster, as a poet. R.I.P.
R.I.P. Leonard Cohen, and that's the end of False Flag Weekly News for this week. And God and President-elect Trump willing, we'll be back here next week. See you then.
See you.